So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribe. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Wisconsin Ice providing information to Wisconsin residents during this health emergency by interviewing those on the front line of dealing, on the front lines of dealing with this health emergency. I want to thank Carolyn Stanford Taylor, Superintendent of the State Department of Public Instruction, for taking time to talk to WISI and you, most importantly, our viewers. Superintendent, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with a couple 10,000 feet questions, ma'am. What advice would you give parents who, many of them are off their jobs, their kids are home, schools are canceled? What advice would you give parents?
Well, first of all, I want to thank parents for their work around this health crisis that we're having right now. We know that these are unprecedented times. I want to have them have relief in terms of what they should be thinking about doing, their responsibility with their students while they're home. We understand that parents cannot replicate what happens in a school over a seven-hour period of time at home, and we're not asking them to do that. We're asking that there be some continuity of learning. So when there are opportunities to work with their students around authentic learning, and we've got some resources available on those, they should use those. We know that districts are providing resources to schools, some in the form of packets, others through virtual or other kinds of instruction for their students. The intent is not for the parent to be obligated to be a teacher for 7 hours of that time. So give yourselves some grace around that. Educators are working hard. We understand that no one could have foreseen this, and that there will be a period of time. We will all be back. Things will resume as normal, and we'll have the opportunity to catch our kids up and make learning available to them again.
Well, as a public service, can you outline the websites, the DPI-specific websites, that a parent who is following this interview could go to maybe get some tips, ma'am?
If you go to the DPI website, there is a COVID-19 page. And on that page, we've got a list of all kinds of resources. If you're EL or English learners, for students with disabilities, for all students, there's information on what schools are doing and what DPI specifically is providing to districts and to students as resources. I also want to talk about our partners in this. We've had PBS who stepped forward, and they've created some programming that's grade appropriate throughout the day. I believe starting at 5 o'clock in the morning. You can tune into that, but people who don't have internet access but have a television, there's a way for them to connect as well, and their kids to connect and stay engaged in learning.
Well, another 10,000 foot question. If, hopefully, the health crisis is over by the end of April, let's say May 15th, would you contemplate recommending that schools, number one, reopen and extend their school year maybe till the end of June, or is that just not feasible, ma'am?
I think of the 421 school districts, they all have their uniquenesses. And so it will depend on funding, staffing. There are a whole number of factors that go into extending the school year. I know that districts right now are thinking about what next, once we kind of get past this operating in crisis of the first couple of weeks. We've been encouraging districts to think about all of those things that students would have missed out on this period of time and what they might do to kind of create some normalcy around this. And so we're still engaged in conversation with them around what that might look like.
Do individual school districts, just following up on that, would they have the authority, ma'am, to, if they could negotiate that with their teachers and administrators, extend their school year? Is it possible that extension of school year could be done on a district-by-district basis?
That's a good question. So what we're saying to districts right now is that if they ask for a waiver of the hours and minutes of instruction for the remainder of the school year, we would be willing to grant that, or until the health crisis, I should say, has ended. We're willing to grant that. Now, in the same breath, I know they're thinking about lost learning for students and how they might, in some kind of innovative way, create opportunities for students to engage in learning. Whether that's summer school, extended school year, I'm not sure. But I know they're in conversation about it.
Are you very concerned that schools in Wisconsin, if the health emergency continues, may not reopen for this school year at all, ma'am?
Given all the conversation that has taken place, that is one of the things we're talking about. It might be that we're not able to open for the remainder of the school year. We have to think in terms of not being able to resume. And then what? We've got students who are graduating. What do we do about them? We've got all of those things that normally happen in the course of a school year. You've heard them talking about the Olympics and athletics and all of that. So it's all of those considerations that people are having conversations around right now. Rites of passage,
yes.
Proms, all of those.
Is DPI and yourself doing any contingency planning that would potentially, hope this doesn't happen, delay the start of the next school year?
No, we're not.
Okay.
We're being very optimistic, very hopeful around the next school year being able to resume as normal.
Okay. I want to thank your staff for providing some numbers that I just want to go through. I think it might be helpful to illustrate some of the issues that we're discussing here. Last year, there were 858,833 students. 47% of those were elementary. So here's my question. Is it tougher to provide online or other type of learning when schools are closed to elementary, or the 21% that were in middle school, or the 30% that were in high school? What are the unique challenges with high school, middle, and elementary?
I think the real challenge is having families able to connect to the technologies, and where school districts are in terms of providing technology for each one of their students. And that's bringing out the inequities in a lot of districts. And I know that's been the concern of a lot of parents. They've looked at neighboring school districts and said, my goodness, they're learning virtually. Why are my kids receiving packets? Well, this school district might not be able to afford every child having the technology and the connection. There might be a Chromebook that they could send home, but there's no internet connection. So then we're really starting to see where those gaps exist, and every district is doing the very best they can to provide some type of continuity of learning for their students. I know specifically in the Madison district right now, they're sending Chromebooks out to every student in the district. Homeless students, all students. They're locating them. They're getting the Chromebooks to them. They're working with other agencies, like we said, with PBS and others who've agreed to allow some internet connection for people for a period of time to try to continue opportunities for learning for all of their kids.
Well, you and I have discussed in our first interview the disparity, the achievement gap. Is there a Chromebook gap in Wisconsin, Superintendent?
There absolutely is. There absolutely is.
And can anything be done short term? Can DPI do something? Can individual parents step up, or residents of the school district? Next steps, ma'am?
I think all of those things can happen. Again, going back to partnerships with organizations and others who are willing to step in and donate services and tools for school districts. We've been meeting with our big five, we call them, the five largest school districts in our state. That's Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, and Kenosha.
Yes.
And talking about their unique needs, because we know that they have the greater percentage of kids who live in poverty, the greater percentage of kids who have special needs, and on and on. And so their needs are often a little bit different than some other areas. Now, there are some rural communities that also share some of those unique needs, but we've been working with them around this whole COVID-19 and what they're seeing and how they're trying to make sure or ensure that their kids are, first of all, fed and safe.
Yes.
And every district in her state has made sure that they have some kind of food service to their kids. DPI has worked with Department of Agriculture. Our nutrition team has worked with them around getting approval to provide food to kids and families, and we've done that. And they're making sure that happens. Those who were not able to get Chromebooks and other things to their kids have provided paper enrichment activities for their kids to use. So I'm just excited that everybody has joined in to create opportunities for our kids and families during this time.
Well, you mentioned the issue of food. Is food insecurity, does that come ahead of the ability to learn academically, Superintendent?
Absolutely, and we've been saying this for forever, that if you're not fed, you can't learn. You need those basic things to happen. So food and safety, the well-being of our kids socially and emotionally, are things that we're trying to make sure we're taking care of. And we're hearing all kinds of stories from around the state where educators have stepped up to create that social contact with their kids to let them know that they're thinking about them. We've got principals who've gone on to Facebook and read stories to their kids, and they can tune in to those. We had a caravan of educators from one school that just went around to their community where they knew their kids lived and waved and had posters up saying, "We miss you, we care about you." It's that kind of contact that we need to maintain so that kids and families still feel connected, because we know that in these times of isolation, when you're away from your daily routine, that anxiety it creates, and not just adults, but kids also, and it creates that stress, and we're trying to make sure that we tap down on that. Some of the resources that we offer talk about taking a break, getting kids outside involved in activities, and this is not, we're still complying with social distancing, but we're saying families who might be able to get out in their backyards or front yards to create some learning opportunities. And within the normal course of the day, if you're cooking, involve the kids in that kind of activity. Or if you know what their interests are, start them on a project. Maybe it's a YouTube project or something that's appropriate for that age level for the kids. So there are many resources that we're offering through our website to give parents and others ideas of how they can work with their kids and have everybody maintain some sense of normalcy during this unprecedented time.
Let's go back to one of the graphics based on the numbers from your agency. Let's talk about of our K-12 students, 85.7% are in public schools, 12% are in private schools. Is there a gap between the ability, are private schools less able to provide online or other types of materials when schools are closed, ma'am?
I don't have the answer to that.
Okay.
I just have anecdotal answers for what we're hearing about and seeing from both private and public schools. I know that some of the private schools are providing some online learning for their kids and probably in greater doses. But there are also other public schools out there that are able to do the same kinds of things.
Okay.
Again, it goes back to that whole equity piece that we were talking about. There are some who are able to do it and others who are not at that point right now. They don't have the resources to do it.
Okay, another number from your agency, which I want to thank you for, is the seventh largest school districts make up 20% of all of our K-12 students. Milwaukee, 74,000, Madison, 26, and all the way down to Waukesha, 12,523. Again, these are the seven largest districts based on information provided by your staff. Is there a disparity? I think you alluded to it earlier, but is there a wide disparity between the ability of our largest districts to provide online or other instructional materials at this time when school is out?
I believe there is. If we were to use the example of the Big Five that I was talking about.
Yes, ma'am.
And those school districts that are trying to provide, I know that they are, Chromebooks and other learning for their kids. But we also have to look at how populations shift. And in a lot of those larger districts, you have greater homelessness, at people without permanent residence who might be staying with others, who might be at the Y, might be at the Beacon or in a hotel. And it's trying to make sure that they, too, receive the kinds of resources. Internet becomes a concern. Can we get hotspots to them? So that's been a lot of their conversation, is how can we provide this? I've heard of a district that had a bus, a mobile bus. There are others who are using the libraries. Our libraries are leaving their internet up, and so they can go and sit in the library parking lot and access it that way. So there are lots of people coming up with lots of innovative ways to try to reach all of our students and families. But yes, it's more of a challenge in our larger districts.
Well, and then the final chart I want to refer to, I want to respect your time, is the five districts that unfortunately have the highest number of economically disadvantaged students. We have two tribal districts that lead. Then you have the Milwaukee district, 83%. Then you have the Arcadia district in Trempealeau County, Bayfield in Bayfield County. Does this speak to the disparity that you alluded to earlier? Broadband to facilitate online learning is not available in many of our rural areas?
That's absolutely right. That's exactly what I was talking about. So even if we could get the digital tools to some of these areas, broadband becomes an issue as well.
Okay. And then the 83% economically disadvantaged in Milwaukee, are they not as likely to get online learning and instructional materials as others in more affluent districts? MPS.
Yes, many of them. Because of, even if you got the technology to them, they don't have a way to access it. And that's why we're looking at some of the Facebook and the PBS learning that they can do via television. So that's another way for them to access. So figuring out other ways for them to be able to access learning.
Right. Maybe a final question. The governor yesterday said agencies have been asked what they need at this time of crisis. What is DPI asking or referring to the governor as a list of here's ways that we can help our 858,000 students? What additional aids or money is DPI asking for in this time of health crisis?
So money is always a big ask, and we know that there are many folks who are asking for money. Some of the other ways that we're asking for assistance is around some of the rules, regulations, and statutes that govern schools, and asking for waivers. So we've asked for a waiver of some of the assessments because we will not be able to finish some of the state assessments and federal assessments that were scheduled for some of our kids. And for our state, we're talking about waiving hours and minutes. We're also talking about the exam, the civics exam, and some other areas. So we're looking at waivers in those areas. But we're also still talking about how do we get broadband to all of our districts so that we can take care of this inequity that currently exists. And so there will need to be some funding around that, or providing hotspots or something for schools. We're still in conversation around some of those needs.
And maybe just one more quick question, if you'll allow. The number of referendums that are on the ballot April 7th, Should voters still vote for their schools, or do you expect the economic uncertainty, their future, their paychecks unknown, to really significantly mean many of those are not going to pass? And what about the Milwaukee bond issue? And then I promise, last question.
So certainly I think the economic uncertainty is going to play into this. But if we look at past history of referendums, our citizens, our taxpayers, have recognized the needs in their school districts, and they voted to tax themselves to provide this need. I think what this crisis has presented to us, and that people are recognizing, is the great role that schools play. And I've heard some parents say that, oh my goodness, I've never appreciated schools more. So it hopefully that's a leveling effect, with parents understanding what we were able to provide, what we should be able to provide, and the need for those additional resources and the great role that schools play towards our economy and our future.
Okay, and before we sign off, could you give us that website again, please, ma'am?
It is the DPI website. Go to the COVID-19 page.
Okay.
It's right on the homepage.
I really appreciate it. We'll end on that hopeful note. I want to thank Carolyn Stanford Taylor. She's the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, for her time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.